is brought to you by Head Start Basketball.
Hey, Hoopheads, save $3,500 on the Dr. Dish CT Plus and score free custom graphics during Dr. Dish Basketball's Push Beyond sales event. Shop this exclusive offer now until March 31st while supplies last. Learn more at drdishbasketball.com and follow their incredible content at Dr. Dish B-Ball on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Mention the Hoopheads podcast and save an extra $300 on the Dr. Dish Rebel, All-Star, and CT models. Those are some great deals, Hoopheads. Get your Dr. Dish shooting machine today.
Hi, this is Kevin Hopkins, head men's basketball coach at Muhlenberg College, and you're listening to the Hoopheads podcast.
Hey, coaches. Excited to talk about Coach's Mirror from Teams of Men. It's a game changer for your team's film analysis, blending Kip Ione's coaching expertise with AI. Short on time or staff, this is for you. Send in a game or up to five and get back a detailed report. We're talking tendencies, strategies, even what opponents might use against you. It's like finding the other team's scouting report in your gym. And here's a bonus. Intrigued by AI and scouting? Grab our free 10-prompt PDF sheet at teamsofmenmembership.group/coachmirror. It's a quick download and a great start to revolutionizing your season review. Don't miss out, coaches. Head to our site and see how Coach's Mirror can transform your game analysis. Catch you there. Prepare like the pros with the all-new FastDraw and FastScout. FastDraw has been the number one play diagramming software for coaches for years. You'll quickly see why Fast Model Sports has the most compelling and intuitive basketball software out there. For a limited time, Fast Model is offering Hoopheads listeners 15% off FastDraw and FastScout. Just use the code HHP15 at checkout to grab your discount, and you'll be on your way to more efficient game prep and improved communication with your team. Fast Model also has new coaching content every week on its blog, plus play and drill diagrams on its playbank. Check out the links in the show notes for more. Fast Model Sports is the best in basketball. Hello and welcome to the Hoopheads podcast. It's Mike Klintzing here with my co-host Jason Sokol tonight. Talking some NBA. Jason's got on his, I think that's an Olmsted Falls Final Four
that's
t-shirt.
Okay, so that's where we're going to start. We're starting there, Mike. That was not related to the podcast, but this is from last year's Final Four. This is not
okay,
this year's
last year.
This is last year's Final Four. So last year, Olmsted Falls made the Final Four for the first time. I know we talked about it last week on the pod. This week, they made it again this year. They blew out Magnificat. I mean, it was a close game in the first half and then the second half. And then they won the state championship, Mike. Pretty impressive, pretty exciting. And, you know, it's really exciting because, I mean, there's multiple reasons. The first one, this is the last year Olmsted Falls is going to be a D1 school. They're going to drop in girls basketball, I believe, to 3. We are on the bottom end of the enrollment spectrum of D1, and we beat all these teams. And I think there was two things that were really impressive, Mike, about the game. There was 5,071 people attended this game, Mike. Okay. That's huge. That's a huge number of people. It had to be like 3,800 of them from the other team, because the other team was 10 minutes from the arena. Okay. That their school was 10 minutes from the arena. So we were clearly outnumbered. And the second thing that was really, really impressive was like the way the game started and the way that they clawed, they fought. I mean, we missed our first 11 shots from the field, Mike, in the game, and they were down 9-2. Their only 2 points were from free throws in the first like 6 minutes of the game. And then they hit 10 threes in the game, Mike, which tied the record for the most in a state championship game. 10 threes in the game, 2021. I don't remember what team it was, but yeah. So lots of really, really cool things happening and really exciting for Olmsted Falls. And it's been awesome. The girls got to do parade in the school. So we had like 10 minutes where they walked through each of the buildings. They went to all the buildings in the district and got to walk through and got clapped through. And it was awesome. It was really, really great. So It's my diatribe on that. And it was great. It was great because I went down. I rode the fan bus on Friday with students. And then on Saturday, my dad and I made a day of it. We went and golfed and then went and watched them. And my dad, who's not at all invested in Olmsted Falls, was making me a nervous wreck during the game and saying, "This is stressing me out." He's like, "I'm having flashbacks to game 7 of 2016. He's elbowing me. And I'm like, "Oh no, please." And then after the game, like just seeing the presentation, and then someone gave us middle school coaches the passes to get on the floor. So we got a picture with them and it was pretty awesome. So there you go.
I think the big thing that you have to take away, obviously for you and being connected and knowing those girls and coached them and whatever.
Yeah, Mike, I taught half of the team. Like yeah, math. I mean, I've taught half of the team in math, and I've coached everyone but one girl in one way, shape, or form. They may not have been on my team, but like we practice together, we do everything together. So 14 of the 15 girls that were sitting on the bench for the state championship game, I taught in one way, shape, or form, whether it was basketball or coaching. Like the only girl I didn't came from St. Mary of the Falls after went all K through 8 in St. Mary of the Falls and then came to Olmsted Falls as a freshman. So,
yeah, I mean, it's just cool. I mean, to be able to have that kind of personal connection and win a state championship and know everybody that's involved in it, that's a special thing. And I think that as I've watched the state playoffs this year, both on the girls' side and on the boys' side, I think you come to the realization that it's so difficult to win, whether it's 7 or 8 games, to get all the way to a state championship. And I don't care what division you're in or whatever, just to be able to go through the gauntlet of good teams that it takes to be able to get there and to not have one game where you shoot the ball poorly or the opponent gets hot or whatever. I know one team has to do it every year. One team wins and gets all the way through in every division and in each gender. But man, you realize how difficult it is when you watch an individual game and how those individual games can swing back and forth from one spot to the other. I mean, we went and watched Brunswick and St. Ignatius on Friday night, and Brunswick's winning the whole game and they ended up losing it and gave up an 8-0 run to start the fourth quarter. But just, you realize like how precarious for both teams. I mean, Ignatius ended up moving on, but it could have just as easily been Brunswick, and you just realize that it's two really good teams battling against each other, and you got to do that 6 or 7 times in order to advance and win a state championship. So I guess my point it's really hard to do.
The other impressive thing, Mike, is this 7-point victory in the state championship game, the closest game other than that for us was 18.
Which that's kind of crazy too. I mean, part of it is what the draw looks like and how good you are. So, but yeah, to have your closest game be 7 is crazy.
And like, I think 4 of the games he got running clock. They running clocked teams. Like that's crazy in a tournament. Like that's just nuts.
Well,
and I know like in the regional final it was 32. It was like almost 35. I mean, that's crazy.
Well, and don't forget they lost 2 Division I players off their team last year that went to the Final Four.
Yeah.
And then you come back and reload and win a state championship. It's impressive.
I don't know like if I asked Eaton what his thoughts were, but like I think obviously the top end was not there, but I think they were way deeper this year. Like he was able to play, you know, every game, including the state semifinal game. He got every girl into the game. Like he got 11 through 15 in the state semifinal game on the floor for at least 2 minutes. I think everyone played at least 1 minute, 2 minutes. Like it's crazy. Like if you have the ability to put them on the floor, like it's great for those kids that, you know, they don't feel like they're just there to be a cheerleader. Like it's really, really awesome for them. You know, There were 2 girls who like just put hard work in over the summer who, you know, he felt like he could, like they deserved some time, and they just played awesome even to get a minute or two in a state semifinal game, you know, that's something they'll be thinking about until, like, not to mention a state championship, but the ability to get to play in that state semifinal game for a few minutes is just awesome.
Yeah, so, it's very cool. Very cool. All right.
It'll be exciting. Well, enough of the Olmsted Falls. Sorry, we went
7.5 minutes on Ohio high school basketball, but we're ostensibly jumping out to talk to NBA.
So,
close to your heart. Yeah, totally understandable.
Yeah. All right. So Mike said, let's come up with questions for one another. And these questions, he set no limitations. So we'll see where we go with this.
No limitations. I'm curious. I think I have some relatively interesting questions, so I'll be curious to see what direction you went with yours, and
I'm gonna see what direction I went with mine. I'm gonna start with the last NBA tweet I sent you, Mike.
Okay.
The Anthony Edwards dunk.
Okay.
And this was a question after watching that dunk, who is the greatest in-game dunker of all time? In-game, not dunk contest. Who is the greatest in-game dunker of all time, in your opinion?
In my lifetime, I think it comes down to three guys. I think the three guys, Jordan, Dominique, Dr. J, for me, those are the three. If I had to pick one, man, it's tough. It's tough to say. Jordan, are
Shaq's nowhere on your list, right? Shaq's nowhere on your list.
No. Shaq obviously dunked on guys and whatever, but Shaq's never going to be spectacular the way those guys are spectacular.
Okay.
I mean, you're splitting hairs when you start going between those three guys in terms of what their dunks looks like. And man, it's hard to choose. So if I think about Doc, and you think about his iconic dunks, you think about the Rock the Cradle against Michael Cooper. I think about the dunks in the 77 finals against the Blazers. There's multiple highlights of just the way Doc waves the ball around like it's a grapefruit and just dunks on people was incredible. When I think about Dominique, I just think about how him as a two-footed dunker just clobbering guys over the head, when I think of Neek, I think of like offensive rebound dunks, just like jumping over the top of people and dunking right on their heads. And then, of course, when you think of Jordan, you just think of the flair. And then I think of him dunking again over people like Patrick Ewing or Dikembe Mutombo or whoever, and then just sort of being dismissive, for lack of a better way of saying it, after he dunks on somebody. It's a tough call. I think probably, though, when I initially hear best in-game dunker, I think if I had to go with one guy, I think I'd probably go with Dominique. That's the first name that pops into my head when I go in-game dunker. I just think Neek, with the combination of power and height and athleticism, I think Dominique's the guy for in-game dunkers.
So, like, when I was thinking about it, Jordan was obviously on my list. LeBron was on my list because I think it's because I grew up watching him, like,
seeing
his dunks and things. I think, like, obviously I wasn't really watching basketball when the other guys that you mentioned were.
You didn't see any Dr. J games live. Let's put it that way.
No, I didn't see it. Shaq was on my list just because of the backboard breaking one, really, to be honest with you. Like that to me, was what I was thinking. So, all right. And it was just because of that Anthony Edwards dunk.
So what's your answer? Who's your one?
I'm going to say Jordan.
That's fair.
I think in my lifetime, I think LeBron's number two, but
you're not going to go wrong saying Michael Jordan as the answer to greatest dunker in any way, shape, or form capacity. So, yeah, I can't argue with that one. All right, so I'll go with my first question, and it actually relates to your question. So in the last 2 days, we've seen the Anthony Edwards dunk, and we've also seen the Kyrie running hook shot game winner over Nikola Jokic. Okay. Are those two plays that 20 years from now we're going to see in highlight montages of the NBA? I know that Kyrie's shot is a game winner. Obviously, it's not a playoff game. It's not a finals game. It's not iconic like his shot over Curry in game 7. And Edwards' dunk, as far as an in-game dunk, that thing has to rank up there pretty high, especially when you talk about the multiple angles and everything that they have of him just annihilating John Collins. Do you think those two plays are around 20 years from now?
I think the answer to that question is, where does Anthony Edwards' career end?
True.
I think if he's, you know, I think if he's a Hall of Famer, then yes, I think we'll see that play. The Kyrie play, Kyrie's going to always be remembered for the shot in 2016. That's going to be his shot. That's his highlight. There's no bigger stage than Game 7 of the Finals, right? I mean,
it doesn't surpass the Game 7 shot, but it's such a crazy shot. It feels like that's a shot that, like, when I think of like Bird shooting the ball, missing, getting his own rebound, and putting it up and shooting it left-handed. Like, that's a play that, whatever, on Twitter you see all the time. When you see NBA highlights of the greatest players of all time, that Bird shot is a shot that you see. And I just think that Kyrie shot was so unique. I think that shot is going to – I think it's going to stick around. I really do. Especially when you take it in the context of you're beating the Nuggets, the defending champions. You're shooting that shot over Jokic. I mean, I don't know how many guys – in the league could even get that shot close to the basket, let alone it look as smooth as it did and have it.
But here's what I'm going to say, Mike, about that shot though. Like, if the Mavericks peter out and don't really do anything in the playoffs,
not looking at the shot. I guess that was part of my question. Like, if you just take the shot and forget about the context, just the shot itself, it wins a game. Yeah, the Mavericks probably aren't going out to win an NBA title. Did it really matter whether now they're in the sixth seed or they're in the play-in? I don't know that the context matters. I think for me it's more of, is that shot so unique and so special that you're going to continue to see it? And I think the answer to that is yes. I mean, I just think it's a crazy shot that you're going to continue to see in highlight reels in perpetuity. Like that, like when you start pulling up again.
Did you see Chris Vernon's attempting it in his driveway?
Yeah, that was
Chris
funny.
Vernon's been taping himself. He did it more. He did it a few times yesterday, and he did it a few times today. So,
It's a crazy shot. I think it's going to be around. And then, so the Edwards dunk, the dunk that it probably, and it's not identical, but it's a similar theory to. You remember the Tom Chambers dunk, right? You know which dunk I'm talking about, the Tom Chambers over Mark Jackson? No. Okay, so I'll try to find that for you and send it to you the next time.
I'll look it on YouTube right now. I'll look it on YouTube right now while you're talking. Go ahead,
so
Mike.
Basically, that Tom Chambers dunk is similar to the Anthony Edwards dunk in that both Edwards and Tom Chambers elevated and then kind of used their defender's body to elevate them even higher. I mean, the Tom Chambers dunk, when you see it, he basically just plants his knee in Mark Jackson and then uses him kind of as a step ladder to go up. And Tom Chambers is almost like looking down into the basket. And I have no idea what the context of that dunk is or was in the moment. And Tom Chambers obviously had a great career, but Tom Chambers is not necessarily considered an all-time great player, certainly a great player, but nobody's putting him in the top 25 players of all time. But that's a dunk that I guess maybe it's not as iconic as I thought since you haven't seen it, but.
I mean, all right, that, I mean, that's a good dunk, but I'm not on that. Like, I think that it's not even close, in my opinion. It's not even close.
So I guess to me, then that Chambers dunk plays.
I mean, his head being up as high as it is pretty cool, but I don't know. I don't think I would have, if you would have said what team did Tom Chambers play for, or was Tom Chambers a member? Was he on the NBA player or a Harry Potter character? I wouldn't be able to tell you, Mike.
Okay, I'm not sure if that says more about you or about Tom Chambers. But nonetheless, I guess in my mind, I think those two dunks, like I think Edwards got up and then also sort of used John Collins to elevate himself even higher as he goes over the top and down.
The dunk it made me think of was that one Dwight Howard dunk that he had where he like was far away from the basket and he almost like threw it in.
Right, threw it in.
Kind of reminded that one. That one is what it reminded me of.
It was similar to that one. To the Dwight Howard, great dunk, unbelievable explosion, power. Anthony Edwards is. When you look at, we talked about this a bunch of times. We talked about it in relation to the World Cup last summer in the Philippines, that it feels like Anthony Edwards' time is coming. And now as Towns has been out and he's had to assume more of the burden of scoring for Minnesota, who was already a little bit offensively challenged, I think a lot of people thought that Minnesota was going to fall out of contention for that number one seed, and the reality is that they're still right there. And as of tonight, they are, I think, a half game behind the Nuggets and Thunder. No, they're a full game right now behind the Nuggets and Thunder at 47.
Nuggets won tonight, so they're one
full game behind those two teams. But I think a lot of people thought they were going to completely fall off, and Anthony Edwards has been phenomenal. And that dunk.
Because they lost tonight. The Nuggets beat the Timberwolves tonight.
So that's, yeah, there you go.
115, 112, so yeah.
I mean, Edwards has just been, again, he's stepped up into that role since Towns has been hurt and has not let them fall off the way that you might have expected them to fall off without the offense that Karl Anthony Towns provides. So I think both of those plays are going to be around for a long, long time. I really do. I just think that the Kyrie shot is so unusual and crazy that I think that sticks around. And then you talk about that Edwards dunk, and it's hard to think about too many dunks that surpass that in terms of the elevation, the power, the just basically coming down and landing on top of a guy. It was a really impressive dunk. So I think both of those plays are going to be around forever. So that was my first question. So we'll go to you for number, I guess you're number two, but number three overall.
All right. So we've seen the stats. We've seen how well he's playing as a rookie. What is Wemby's ceiling? What is his ceiling? Mike, I'm not talking about how tall can he be.
Dude, we're two for two now. We're two for two. So your first question was semi-related to my first question. And I have – all right. So your question is, what's Wemby's ceiling?
What's his ceiling? Like what? Like when we're talking in the pantheon of NBA players, where can Wemby get to? Can he be a top 10 player? I think we're going to just pretend like he's healthy and he's never injured. Okay, could he be a top 10 player all time? I think my answer is yes.
All right, so I'm going to answer your question, and then I'm going to ask my question. So my answer to that question is also yes. And then the question that I had written down was, why haven't we talked really at all? I mean, I don't think we've talked Wemby at all since really the draft. I mean, I would venture to guess that on most of our NBA podcasts, if not all of them since the season started, I don't know if we've mentioned Wemby one. I don't even know if we mentioned him once. I mean, I can't remember. We've talked about it.
We've talked about him, Mike.
Not much.
We have
not very much. We've talked about.
Did you see that play he made, or did you see that the stat line he had? Or but I think here's the problem, Mike. The Spurs are so terrible. Everyone else on the Spurs are so bad. Like they've won how many games?
13, I think. They're 15 or 15.
They're out of the playoffs. We still have three weeks left in the season. They're out of the playoffs already. They are the worst team in the West. They've somehow have four less wins than the friggin' Portland Trailblazers, who were purposely tanking the season. Okay? And it's not that Wemby has sat games, because he's not. Like, he's definitely played more games than we thought he was going to play.
Oh,
right?
Yeah, absolutely.
Like, for sure. For sure he's – the team around him is pitiful. I mean, the only team that I think is worse, the only two teams that have a worse record than them is Detroit and Washington. That's why we haven't talked about them much. It's kind of, let's see, who was it that had a really good season 2 years ago, but their team was terrible? Oh, LaMelo, right? His rookie season. LaMelo had a great rookie season, and that team was pitiful. They were so bad. So, you know, we were like, oh, good stats, bad team, guy, maybe. You know, things like that. I'm pretty sure we talked about that. But we're not saying that about Wemby, but I think those – I know that's apples and oranges, that, you know, LaMelo Ball and Wemby's apples and oranges. And Wemby's proven it overseas, so like we know that his ceiling is high.
Hey, LaMelo proved it overseas.
Australia, right? He played in Australia. Come on now. You might be able to play Australia now, Mike.
I don't know about that, buddy. No, I'm just kidding.
Anyways, no, what I'm saying is this. Like, I think Wemby's ceiling, but here's the problem. They need to fix the team. Like, they're bad. They're really, really bad. Like, and I don't know what, you know, I don't know how to fix it. And honestly, Mike, I don't know that I could name two players that are on the San Antonio Spurs right now. Let me think. Kelvin Johnson, is that guy on the team?
Keldon Johnson.
Okay,
you should know more. Come on.
Keldon Johnson.
Forward masquerading as a point guard for the beginning part of the season from Baylor. Jeremy Sochan.
Oh yeah.
You got your second best.
His pink hair.
Yeah, you got your second best player from Florida State, who is a guy that's probably a keeper. Went in the Isaac Okoro draft. Devin Vassell.
That's what I'm saying. Like, look, these are the players that we're naming.
Chetty Osman.
Oh, Chetty's on the team. That's right. Listen, I'm just telling you. Like, I just don't. They need to fix the roster. That's what that needs to happen.
Okay, so here's the question, right? Here's the question. When you look at Victor Wembanyama and you look at what we think he could become, which both you and I said that barring injury, that he's got a pretty good chance of being an all-time great player. And so I think that based on where we think he can get to, he's probably the best rookie since LeBron in terms of where we think his potential might go. And so you look at, okay, what did the Cavs do back in the day trying to build their team? And the Cavs were not as bad as the Spurs are this year, but they were pretty bad in LeBron's first year.
What are you talking about? LeBron's first year? I mean, they weren't this bad, Mike.
No, that's what I'm saying. They weren't this bad. They were bad, but they weren't this bad. They didn't make the playoffs. But by, I believe, LeBron's fourth season is when they made the finals. Now, albeit against a terrible Eastern Conference, and they were pretty much non-competitive against that Spurs team the first time they went to the playoffs in, what was that, 2007?
Yeah.
Yeah, 2007. So anyway, I guess the point here is that when you have a guy this good, he's just not going to mm-hmm. like the Spurs as a team might want to be bad again next year, bad enough that they could potentially get in the lottery, where most people seem to think that the consensus is next year's draft is going to be much better, with much deeper, with talented players. And so maybe if you're the Spurs organization, you wouldn't mind spending one more year in lottery land. But the reality is that this guy is so good.
In LeBron's first season, they won 35 games and missed the playoffs by one.
Okay, I'm just saying that it's not like LeBron did not come in. I'm not trying to denigrate LeBron.
I was sitting here thinking, wait a second. Didn't they almost make the playoffs?
Look, I'm not trying to denigrate.
Granted, they were 35-47, but they only missed the playoffs by one game in that year.
Right. So the Eastern Conference was objectively pitiful at that point. Anyway, the point here being is that LeBron was very good very quickly, and as he got better in his second and third seasons, it becomes obvious that you can't really tank with LeBron on your roster. You can't really tank with Victor. Now, this year they've done a pretty good job of tanking, because more or less what they did was they refused to play the guys that should have been playing together, like Trey Jones and Victor basically never played together. But when they did, and when they do, they have a positive plus minus for a team that's 15 and whatever they are, 15-57. So I think that San Antonio this year made a decision that we're going to almost sabotage our own chances just with the guys we play and the lineups that we put out there. But at a certain point next season, Wemby's just, he's going to be too good for them to, they're not going to win 15 games next year. I mean, I don't care if you come back with the exact same roster. Like, this dude, he's averaging 20, 10, 3.5 blocks, almost a steal and a half a game. And defensively, he's only going to get better. His shooting has been so much better since the first of the year. And I just think next season, you're looking at a guy who, he's an all-star for sure next season. I think there's a pretty decent chance that he's on an all-NBA team. I think he's definitely on the all-defensive team if he doesn't make it on there this year. And at a certain point, I think the question becomes, if you're the Spurs, how do you go about building out your roster around Victor? And you have to look at, what are the models, like, how could you do it? Could you go the Cavs route, where you try to bring in a big free agent? You try to sign your Larry Hughes, which obviously didn't work out the way that the Cavs would have hoped. So the Cavs tried to fast track it, because they're like, holy cow, LeBron's ready to win here in season three, and we got to do some stuff to keep him happy. Does San Antonio do that? Do they go with a slow build? Do they try it? Now, they have their own draft picks, and I believe they have the picks from Atlanta from the DeJounte Murray trade. So they've got some stuff theoretically that they could trade. And they got some young guys that might have value to other teams. You mentioned Keldon Johnson. Certainly Devin Vassell. I think he's a guy that the Spurs are going to want to keep, but if they were to make him available, he'd have value. Sohan would have value. Trey Jones would have value. Malachi Branham from Ohio State would have value. So there's some guys that potentially you could put into deals along with some of those draft picks and bring somebody in, or bring multiple somebodies in, to sort of accelerate it. But I think that you've got to be really careful about how you team build if you're San Antonio. I think, can you afford to do what Oklahoma City did with Shea and just lose for 2, 3, 4 years, and your superstar in waiting is just kind of sitting there and keeps quiet and doesn't say anything? Or does Victor start agitating for more of the LeBron path, where like, hey, we got to do some stuff to win now? And I think the slow build is probably better. The problem is that I think this is the Spurs' last bite at the apple at the top of the draft. I think from this point forward, maybe you're out of the play-in, but you're certainly going to win a lot more than 15 or 16 games next year. There's just no way. This guy's too good.
Yep.
Hey, coaches, we know you're invested in the next generation of athletes. So why not give them the star treatment this season with Game Changer? Introducing Game Changer, a free app that provides you with data to make strategic coaching decisions and to deliver memorable moments to your team and its fans. Engage your players, empower your coaching decisions, and give parents the thrill of watching every play unfold in real time this season. Download Game Changer now on iOS or Android. Game Changer equips your team with the tools they need to succeed. Download it today and make this season one for the books. Game Changer. Stream. Score. Connect. Learn more at gc.com/hoopheads. That's gc.com/hoopheads.
Mike, I got a question for you.
Okay. Is this one of your official questions or this is...
This is a divergent.
All right.
On the Cavs roster that we were just talking about.
Okay.
Only one player played all 82 games that season. It was not LeBron James.
That first season. So you're kind of chuckling. So
He was one of my mom's favorite players. That does not help you at all.
One of your
Because of his name.
Because his name, she liked the name or she thought the name was funny.
She just liked saying his name.
She enjoyed saying his name. Man. I have no idea.
Okay. He was recently promoted to a head coaching role when someone got fired.
Recently promoted to a head coaching role in the NBA.
In the NBA.
So, Jacque Vaughn got fired, right?
Yeah. So who took his job?
Who took his job? I'm drawing a complete blank. Who took the next job?
He was a UConn. He coached at UConn.
Kevin Ollie
is the only player that started or played in every game that season.
Wow, interesting.
He started 7 games. He played 82. Zydrunas played 81 that year. Like,
it's pretty impressive.
Boozer played 75 and LeBron played 79.
No such thing as load management back in the day, baby.
Kevin Ollie. What a name. What a guy.
That's funny. Look, okay, so I agree. I think Victor stays healthy and what he's going to do defensively, not to mention what he's already doing offensively, the Spurs are going to have to figure it out quick, and it'll be interesting to see how they build their team around Wembanyama, and do they try to slow build it through the draft? Do they go for trades? Obviously, they're not a huge free agent destination, but maybe because of the historical quality of the organization, and maybe guys do want to play with Victor as time goes on. Who knows? But it'll be interesting to see how the Spurs build this team, because Wembanyama's good. I mean, he's good right now today, and certainly, if not next year, the year after, you're talking about a guy who is going to be an all-NBA player year after year after year, as long as he remains healthy. And so you've got to build a team around him that can compete. And we all know that that clock starts ticking way sooner than anybody would want it to. And they're as good as he's been, he's accelerated the timeline for the Spurs. Let's put it that way.
Yep. All right. So we were just kind of combined one of our own questions. So do you want me to ask another question?
Yeah, go for it.
Or do you want?
No, okay. Go for it.
All right. You and I were talking about this off the air, not like talking, but texting. Does LeBron stay in LA or is he gone after the season? I know he has 50 million reasons to stay in LA because of his player option. But the ship is sinking. The team, I mean, the other night, he did everything he could against the Warriors. He got Anthony Davis getting hurt again. Couldn't got poked in the eye and couldn't keep playing or something. And did they ever say, was it a, what the injury was? It was just a cut on his eye. Like I didn't see anything major, right? Like,
no, I don't think it was anything major. I think he'll.
So you get, suck it up, dude. I'm sorry. I'm done. Anthony Davis. I'm over it. You are. Listen, give me a break. Suck it up, Buttercup. Listen, you got LeBron James at 40 doing what he's doing, and no one else is like contributing. The team is barely in the playoffs as it is. They're in the play-in tournament. I just don't see how this can be enjoyable to him. I just don't. I mean, yes, he's still the guy and he's got to score all these points, but he can't enjoy not winning. He can't enjoy being in the ninth and the 10th seed. LeBron, there's a place that could really use your talents. And you would win the East if you came there. I genuinely believe you would win the East, LeBron, if you came to Cleveland. You say, I'm going to come to Cleveland. I'm going to take a cheap contract because I'll make the money elsewhere. Because I don't think we could, we can't pay him. We'd have to get rid of someone if we're going to pay him. And there's no team in the East that could be, even if with Mitchell and Garland's checkered injury problems and, you know, I know Mobley's been injured this year, and Jaren Allen, I'm just telling you, they'd win the East. They'd compete for the NBA championship if LeBron was on this team. LeBron, come home one more time. I'm starting this pledge early, Mike.
Starting the campaign early.
I started it in 2012, the summer of 2013 at Head Start Basketball Camp, and you said I was crazy. I'm bringing it back, baby. Let's go. Listen, LeBron, come home. We'll figure out the financial situation. Listen, I think instead of the tax for the Cuyahoga County tax for the new Cleveland Brown Stadium, let's just do a Cuyahoga County tax for bringing LeBron James home. It will pass. You'll bring the money into the city of Cleveland anyways. I'm just saying, listen, there's no way to me that if I'm here, I stay in LA unless I just really don't care. And I think he cares. I think he cares. I know that he's at, listen, what does he got? I think I've heard rumors that he's looking for a 3-year contract. He's looking for a 2-year contract, big money contract. But if he's in the league in 2 years, I think he's just going to be happy that he's still playing basketball at 42 and at a high level. So LeBron, swan song, come home, win another championship, and etch your name in history. You'll be, I'm just saying, that's what I'm saying. I think if he came here, listen, you saw what Marcus Morris came last night. He looked like LeBron for a few minutes there. I was like, who's this guy? Who's this guy that's out there playing defense?
Oh man.
Shooting threes, making them.
To have to cheer for a Morris brother is disheartening.
When he hit the shot at the buzzer, I jumped up and down. Man. I was like, oh, Mike's losing more hair.
Man, I don't know if I can do it.
I know I've ranted here. I've said my piece. LeBron, come home. I need to do the sign thing where the guy ran on. I know he's not going to come to Cleveland again this year, but come on, LeBron. JJ, get me on your podcast, JJ. I want to talk to you and LeBron. I'm going to talk some sense into that man.
All right. Well, so I think I look at it from a couple of different perspectives. One, I don't think there's any doubt that long-term LeBron James, the human being, wants to live in Los Angeles. I don't think that that's debatable. On the other hand, I would think that LeBron James, the basketball player, still playing at the level that he's playing at, would want to be in a situation where winning an NBA championship is realistic. I don't think that you can look at this current Lakers roster and also what this current Lakers roster could potentially become, and say that this team has a legitimate chance to win an NBA championship. So the question then becomes, would LeBron be willing to leave LA short term for 9 or 10 months out of the next 1, 2, 3 years, whatever, in order to, and I don't even want to say chase a ring, because when I think of somebody chasing a ring, I think of somebody who is a bit player or a fifth man or a guy off the bench. LeBron clearly, unless he takes a precipitous drop, is not going to be that. He's going to be one of the key contributors to a team's success. So, look, I think I would put the odds of him coming back to the Lakers at like 90%. I really think that for whatever reason at this point, the desire that he has to continue to live in Los Angeles, I think supersedes whatever basketball ambitions he still has at his age, which again is hard to believe in some ways, because there's no way that he can do what he's doing without continuing to put in a tremendous amount of work on his body and his game. And it feels like if you were investing all that he has to be investing in order to be playing at this level, that you would want a chance at a championship. Now, he still may be naive enough to believe that his team has a chance if they get the right draw, or if they're like, healthy, he, or whatever.
I honestly don't think he does. I don't think he's dumb. I don't think he's dumb enough to think that they still have a chance. I honestly don't.
So I guess it still comes down to, is the desire to live in Los Angeles, does that supersede the desire to go and find an opportunity where he could win another championship? Whether that's in Cleveland or someone else or somewhere else is debatable. I mean, certainly when you look at the Cavs roster and where there's a hole, LeBron would certainly plug a hole in the Cavs roster in a very nice way. But I'm sure there are other places. And again, how much does LeBron want to get paid? If LeBron wants to win championships and he wants to make less money in order to do so, then he has a lot of options. And I don't know what he's going to do, but what I will say is, when you look at what he's done this year, I just want this to be this is going to be a LeBron James appreciation moment, because oftentimes I know on here that as I'm celebrating Michael Jordan as the greatest player of all time, I try to make it clear that although I don't think LeBron is as good as Michael Jordan, LeBron is absolutely incredible in every possible sense of the word. And I've said it before that his story, him as a person and as a basketball player, living up to the hype of what was put on him when he was 13 or 14 years old, and living up to that, and in many ways exceeding it, both on and off the floor, is just incredible. But just listen to his stats for this season. It's insane. So he's played in 60 games, and I believe the Lakers have played, I don't know, 68 games maybe, somewhere in that range. He's averaging 35 minutes a game. He's averaging 25.5 points, 7.2 rebounds, 8.1 assists, 1.2 steals. He's shooting 53% from the floor, 40% from three on almost 5.5 attempts a game. For him, a good year at the free throw line. He's shooting almost 75%. Those numbers are ridiculous for a great player prime.
For a mediocre player, right?
Those are unbelievable statistics for a great player in their prime, in the absolute prime of their career. And you're talking about, this guy is 39 years old. It's legitimately insane. And if I was betting, I would bet he's going to be on the Lakers next year. But I'm willing to entertain the possibility that he would leave to go give himself a better opportunity to win another championship. And clearly, if he's still playing at anything close to this level next season or the season after, then it's not a hollow ring where he can say, oh, I won six rings, but the last two I won, I was the eighth man averaging.
He didn't try to do the Karl Malone and Gary Payton situation.
Right. And look, you can't fault Gary Payton and Karl Malone in those cases for wanting to try to win a championship. There's nothing wrong with a player trying to win a championship. But I think when you start the things that are important to LeBron in terms of his legacy and the comparison with Jordan and everything, if let's just say LeBron was playing far worse than what he was playing, like a normal 39-year-old, and then he went to some other team and he won two more championships as their eighth man or their fifth starter, averaging 11 points a game.
Then that's going to be hurt his legacy. It's going to hurt his legacy.
It wouldn't necessarily hurt the legacy, but it's not going to, but to me, that wouldn't bolster. Like if Karl Malone had won a championship with the Lakers playing 7 minutes a game, is that going to impact how I feel about Karl Malone as a player? I don't really think so. And I don't think that if LeBron were a bit player and won two more championships, I don't think that that would be, I don't think that that would be something that would bolster his legacy. Pro Skills Basketball is the nation's premier club basketball organization, building a European-style youth basketball academy, and is looking for the top basketball leaders in major U.S. cities to become our next city directors. Specifically, Pro Skills is looking for women and men of high character and grit who see the problems in youth basketball and want to join an elite team focused on a singular mission: to change the culture of youth basketball. This job typically begins as a part-time position with the desire and expectation from both the city director and Pro Skills that together they will build it up to eventually support a full-time city director position. If you're interested in learning more or applying, please visit proskillsbasketball.com/jobs. Okay, my next question. Was the play-in loss in Las Vegas to the Los Angeles Lakers somehow a turning point in the career of Zion Williamson?
No, being healthy is the turning point.
I read today that he's lost 25 pounds since then, which, I don't know, did you see that? Did you see the dunk he had tonight?
Alley-oop dunk tonight?
Yeah.
Yeah. I think being healthy is the turning point, Mike. If he's healthy, listen, I'm going to be paying up on a pizza here soon. I mean, it's the bottom line. It's going to happen sooner rather than later, but at some point, I'm going to have to pay up on a pizza. I'm going to just show up to camp one day with a pizza for you because he's going to have the days. I think that's what's, it's going to have to happen, and then you'll be walking around doing, we'll be doing stations. You'll just be eating pizza and be like, ha ha, I'm eating a pizza because Coach Jason is an idiot. I mean, listen, the bottom line is this. I think him being healthy is the turning point. I don't think the play and loss, I mean, did that motivate him to be better? No, I think, I mean, he didn't play great right after the play in though, right? Wasn't that when all there was all those press conferences and you were like, well, you and I were talking about it. So that wasn't, I don't think the turning point was the play in. I think the turning point was maybe he had, you know, I feel like it was, so the play in was like December around Christmas time was when those press conferences were happening. And once again, I could be getting my timeline all wrong because my concept of time when I'm coaching and teaching isn't necessarily the greatest, but I feel like around Christmas time, when he was having those press conferences and saying those things, and we were like, what is going on with this guy? Like, we didn't feel really good about it, right? So I think that's the turning point. I think him being healthy and then realizing that he needed to, like, figure stuff out, that's what I'm going with. And maybe I'm wrong. Maybe those press conferences were before the play-in tournament, but I feel like it was after.
I think it was after, and I think that when you look at sort of where the Pelicans are, they won tonight, beat the hapless Brooklyn Nets. But
barely, right? It was close game, right?
Close. No, they were up. They won by 13. They were up most of the game. Relatively, they were okay. They were up. I think they were up double figures most of the second half. But
okay,
Zion's been, as you said, the number one key is that he's been healthy, and he hasn't been as good statistically as he has been in other times when he's been healthy, which hasn't been very often. But he still is just a guy that teams have a really, really hard time matching up with him because of the athleticism, the physicality, just the sheer size, the explosiveness, all the things that make him the special player that he is, make him such a really tough cover for almost every team in the league. And then you look at how well this team has been playing. And I know it's been talked about a lot with Herb Jones that going into this season, everybody knew about the guy's defense. And the question was, would he ever be able to shoot it? And Herb Jones this year, I believe he's shooting right about 40% from three. He's actually shooting, 43% from three. So on 3.5 attempts, so not a huge amount of attempts, but still, that's legit. And then the other guy that's come back from injury that's made a big difference, Trey Murphy. When those two guys are on the floor, they're both long, they're both good defenders. In the case of Trey Murphy, unbelievable defenders. In the case of Herb Jones. And then you have kind of the rest of their team, which leans offense when you think about Zion and Brandon Ingram and CJ and Valanciunas. Those are all guys that are primarily known for their offense. And so Murphy and Herb Jones kind of balance out who they are as a team. And it's going to be really interesting because they're a game behind right now the LA Clippers for that fourth seed in the Western Conference. And potentially they could overtake. They're actually only a half game behind the Clippers now after that win tonight. And they're a tough matchup for any team just because they have some weird, they just have a bunch of weird guys starting with Zion. And I think the Clippers obviously haven't been playing nearly as well. And that's actually one of my questions. So we can answer it now quickly. The Clippers, were we right or wrong on the Clippers after the Harden trade? It looked like after the first five games, we were completely right. Then it looked like, oh man, are we wrong for 2 months as they just ripped off a whatever 25-5 stretch. And now feels like they've kind of fallen apart again, both due to some injury, but also just that they're not playing as well. And so I think New Orleans catches them. And I can't wait to see Zion play in the playoffs. I can't wait to see what that looks like.
So here's my thought, Mike.
Okay.
I think there's a lot of volatility in both conferences right now with anyone that's not the number, like in East, anyone that's not the Celtics, there's a lot of volatility. I think anyone can beat anyone, honestly. In the West, I almost think that anyone could beat anyone across the board in the West. I think the Clippers
except Denver.
You don't think anyone's going to beat Denver?
No.
You don't think anyone could?
Okay. I'm not saying I'm not saying it's completely out of the realm of possibility, but I would be very surprised if anyone beats the Nuggets. Whereas I could easily see, I wouldn't be surprised.
I think that someone could beat the Nuggets. I think they have to do the right things, and I don't know what the right things are, but I think a team could beat the Nuggets. I wouldn't be surprised if a team beat the Nuggets.
Okay.
I think the West is way more volatile than you and I even know. I think that that's why teams have gone like this. They've gone like this and this. Let's look at the Mavericks at the beginning of the season. We're all the way up here, and then they came down, and now they're like seemingly coming back up a little bit. The Clippers were kind of like this. They plateaued, then they got hardened, they went down, then they went up, and now they're going down. I mean, the Nuggets have even been on a bit of a like up and down. There's been stretches they've been up and down. Minnesota's probably been the most, like, Minnesota and Denver have probably been the two most consistent. Like,
OKC's been pretty consistent too.
I mean, I guess, yeah. But I just feel like there's a lot of volatility in the West. I think the East is anyone but Celtics is
as volatile, honestly. And still, at the same token, I don't feel great about the Celtics. If you told me that the Celtics lost in the first round to the Heat or something, would I believe it? Probably because of the track record, right? Like,
yeah.
Do I think it's going to happen? I don't think it's going to happen, but.
I don't know. I think Denver and Boston, I think, are two teams that I would be surprised that if – I would be surprised if either one of those teams loses, certainly before the conference finals. And I think those two teams have got to be prohibitive favorites if they're healthy to make the NBA finals. But I agree with you other than that. I think up and down, you could make a case for any of those teams beating any other team. I really think that there's – I really think there's a decent chance.
Yeah. Go ahead. Can the Knicks survive OG Anunoby not playing? They've been playing so well. You saw he's out.
Why is he not playing?
His elbow flared up again. And they said he's going to be out for the next game, and Woj is reporting that it's going to be longer than just the next game.
The Knicks have played well. The Knicks have played well over the last few games. They've been on a tough road trip, and
he played except for the first game he missed was the other last game they played.
They've played well. The Knicks have continued to play well. I mean, they're keeping the pressure on the Cavs. They're only two games behind. Three games behind Milwaukee, and they're at the same time, they're only a half game ahead of the Magic to stay out of the fifth spot. So it's just that race between the Bucks, Cavs, and Knicks for 2, 3, and 4 is going to be really interesting. And then it'll be interesting to see how those teams match up with the teams in the bottom half of the Eastern Conference playoff race and play in. So who knows? We'll have to see. I have one more question for you real quick.
Good. Okay, go ahead.
I don't even know if it's a question, but do you know who the hottest team in the NBA is?
I mean, the Celtics have won 6 in a row.
There's another team that's won 6 in a row.
Western Conference team?
Western Conference team.
From the state of California?
No. You'll never get it.
Because they just lost. Hold on. Not the Suns because they just... Is it a team that's out of the playoffs?
Yes.
Is it the Blazers?
No.
Okay, I give up. Who is it?
The Houston Rockets, man. The Houston Rockets are 2.5 games behind the Golden State Warriors for the 10th spot.
Well, you're out of the playoffs, I mean there's no chance. Okay. Yeah.
Sorry. They're currently out of the playoff picture. Okay, so here's what I want to say about the Rockets. They beat the Cavs the other day, and they're also doing it without Şengün, who's been out for, I don't know, he's been out 5 or 6 games now since he injured his leg. But I just want you to read I want to read you the box score of tonight's game. Now, granted, they're playing the Wizards, so take this with a grain of salt. However, here are some statistics. Jalen Green tonight, 12 of 21 from the field, 7 of 13 from 3, 11 of 13 from the line, 10 rebounds, 42 points tonight for Jalen Green, a guy who a lot of people were ready to give up on him and thought that the Rockets should have traded him. Then the next one we have is Amen Thompson, 25 points. 10 rebounds tonight for Amen Thompson, 10 of 12 from the field. And then finally, Jabari Smith, 18 points, 14 rebounds. Those are three guys that have been drafted in the last 3 seasons in the top 5 who have seemingly started to figure this thing out. And I think we've come to the consensus on this podcast that Ime Udoka, despite whatever may have happened in Boston, that the guy's a really good NBA coach.
He's a good coach. He's a good coach, Mike.
Correct. And so I think that Houston's been, to your point about a lot of teams, they've been kind of up and down. They started out pretty good and then they hit a dry spell and now it seems like they're kind of coming back. But they're only 3 games behind the Warriors in the loss column, which I know with only 15 games to go, that's a lot of ground to overcome. But
it could be done.
It could be done. And I just think that these guys have, there's a lot of young talent on this team that if it also coalesces, I think it fits together pretty well. I mean, you're talking about like Şengün is probably or has probably performed the best of any of those 3 guys that I already mentioned. And you have one guy that went for 42, another guy that went for 25 and 10, and another guy that went for 18 and 14. And of your young players, those 3 aren't even the best young player potentially that you have. So yeah. Houston's future, I think if you're a Houston Rockets fan, you got to feel pretty good about what your future looks like with the guys that they have. And it'll be interesting to see if they can stay hot and put some pressure on Golden State or maybe even the Lakers as we go through. I don't expect them to get into that plan, but I guarantee they're going to keep playing hard to try to get there. Let's put it that way. So
yeah. Yeah. Good point.
I would not have known that they had won 6 in a row unless I had carefully looked at the standings as I was trying to figure out what my questions were going to be. So I was like, whoa, 6 in a row. They're right
pretty
there.
Impressive.
I mean, yeah, they're right there. So,
oh right, my God, Mike.
What?
LeBron or Simmons podcast just came out. His lead in best in-game dunkers of all time.
All right. There you go. Great minds think alike. Well, I mean, again, there's not anybody who would have seen that Anthony Edwards dunk and not have considered it. So we'll have to see what Simmons says. Anything else?
No, I got excited me. Sorry.
All right. Well, there you go. We'll have to see what Simmons has to say. All right. Let's leave it there. Yeah. Thanks to everyone for listening tonight. Really appreciate it. And we will catch you on our next episode. Thanks.
Your first impression is everything when applying for a new coaching job. A professional coaching portfolio is the tool that highlights your coaching achievements and philosophies, and most of all, helps separate you and your abilities from the other applicants. The Coaching Portfolio Guide is an instructional membership-based website that helps you develop a personalized portfolio. Each section of the Portfolio Guide provides detailed instructions on how to organize your portfolio in a professional manner. The guide also provides sample documents for each section of your portfolio that you can copy, modify, and add to your personal portfolio. As a Hoopheads Pod listener, you can get your Coaching Portfolio Guide for just $25. Visit coachingportfolioguide.com/hoopheads to learn more.
Thanks for listening to the Hoopheads Podcast, presented by Head Start Basketball.